This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge, and you are with Joy and Bertie and Andrew.
The Three Musketeers are back again.
Otherwise known as the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof.
Absolutely. And because the Oscars are coming up.
Are we going to win one?
It'd be nice to get an Oscar, wouldn't it?
For radio programs. How does that work?
I don't think they exist for radio programming, do they?
Damn.
We have decided to theme this show all about films that have a spiritual or faith connection to them. And so we're doing a little film review for the whole hour. So stick with us, don't go away, because it's going to be very exciting.
I haven't watched this many movies in ages.
I actually had to force myself to sit down and watch a couple.
Did you have popcorn?
Well, no, but there was wine and cheese. Does that count?
Oh, that's even better.
That's better than popcorn. I'm coming to your cinema next time.
That's in style, yes.
You're welcome to my lounge room whenever you want.
Anyway, one of my one of the ones I'm reviewing, which is very tongue-in-cheek and great fun, is Sister Act, which, of course, starred Whoopi Goldberg, great fun. So we're going to kick off with a track from Sister Act. This is very well known by our community. This is A Deeper Love, a tribute to Aretha Franklin by Studio All-Stars.
Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne and on Star Observer Digital in Sydney. That's exciting.
Woohoo.
A digital radio pop-up station presented by 2SER, Joy and Star Observer. See the banner at joy.org.au for more details. And welcome to Spirit Lounge. And we are talking tonight about films with a faith-based twist. We do like a bit of a twist.
We do. We like that bit.
If you would like to tell us about films that you have seen and songs from those films, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949. You can ring on 1300JOY949. And you can email onair@joy.org.au or press the little button on your appy thing.
I assume you don't have an appy thing, darling.
I have some appy things, but not a Joy appy thing.
I'm appy, but it's not on my phone, mate. Sorry. Now, the first film we're going to review is called Paradise Road. Some of you may have seen it. It's based on real-life events that took place in 1942. It tells the story of a group of English, American, Dutch and Australian women who are imprisoned by the Japanese in Sumatra during World War II. In the early afternoon of Saturday, 14th of February 1942, the British ship Vina Brook, carrying some of the last civilians to escape from Singapore, was passing the southeast coast of Sumatra. Among the passengers were 65 women of the Australian Army Nursing Service, who'd been evacuated from Malaysia a few days before the fall of Singapore. 2 days later, their ship, which was full of women and children, was bombed and sunk by the Japanese. Of the 53 survivors who scrambled ashore on Banka Island, 21 were shot by the Japanese soldiers and the remaining 32 were taken prisoner. 8 later died in prison. Having survived the bombing and sinking of the ship and the massacre of many of their friends and colleagues on the beach, the surviving women think that the worst is over. But life deteriorates even further in the prison camp, which is when they face their harshest test of survival. The women who gather in the camp originally meet in Muntok, which is in northwest Indonesia. And after days of marching through dense jungle, they finally reach their camp. Australian nurses, Dutch women from the East Indies, English women from Singapore, and Malaysia, Protestant missionaries, Catholic nuns, and other women diverse in nationality, race, and social status. The 1997 film has a strong lineup of characters, including Glenn Close, who plays Adrian Pargita, an English tea planter's wife, and Pauline Collins, a missionary character, Daisy Drummond, who writes the musical arrangements as they form a vocal orchestra based on Adrian's amazing memory for music. With little more than prompting by those able to hum a few missing sections, she wrote down the music to at least 30 classical orchestral pieces. The orchestra lifts the spirits of this bleak camp in which there is no entertainment or music, and in which all meetings, including religious services and children's lessons, are forbidden. The women do not imitate instruments, but by humming on selected consonants and singing sounds rather than words, they create their own unique art. These two women combined their qualities to persuade and inspire 40 women to train for long hours and to then perform at such a level that they could momentarily liberate themselves and their listeners from their squalid camp. This beautiful, harmonious music gradually softens even some of the Japanese soldiers. You finally see a human side to a handful of them. Now, this is very passionate for me and very close to my heart because, of course, my great aunt was a prisoner of war in Changi Jail. Now, this is based on a book which has the unusual title of White Coolies, written from the detailed and sometimes harrowing diary kept by one of the nurses. She was actually from Tasmania, called Betty Jeffrey. And during the three grueling years of imprisonment, this is an account of the true story which inspired the film. Have you ever heard the term White Coolies?
I've not, no.
Because I had to look that up, and a coolie is a derogatory name for an Asian slave or manual labourer. And this is what the Japanese called the nurses, the Western nurses. They were called white coolies by the Japanese, which is, not very nice at all. Amazing film if you are into that kind of stuff. It's very raw. It's very moving. It's a remarkable story of women's ability to survive hardship, starvation, disease, torture, deprivation. They persevere. There's great solidarity and creativity, and it really shows the strength of spirit. You've seen Tenko and things like that. This is a bit different. It's a true story. It's an amazing film, Paradise Road. And this is a track from it. Not the type of music we would normally play on the show. Stick with it. It's called The Longest Day by L'Orchestre Cinématique.
The fresh sounds of Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Palm and the Poof. Now, the first movie I watched was Children of God, and it starts with these two guys in bed, one white, one black, and I'm thinking, oh, here we go, there's going to be lots of sex and no substance. Boy, was I wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was set in the Bahamas. Mm. And I thought, well, this, you know, and it started off quite slow, and I'm thinking, oh, this is drawn out. But it actually turned out to be quite an amazing movie. There's three main characters in this movie. Johnny, who's a white guy, and mm-hmm. he is studying to be an artist, but is about to be failed because despite apparently being a fabulous artist, you don't get to actually see any of his art. It's all devoid of emotion. And so the art teacher sends him on a journey to the island that she comes from, and she has a home there, so she sends him. And she said, you've got to go to Lighthouse Beach, and you've got to paint what you see. But it's not actually the painting that's going to be what stirs the emotion, it's actually the journey. So it's quite interesting. And we meet one of the other main characters, Alina. She's a minister's wife, and her job is to campaign to stop gay rights. Mm-hmm. And we meet her when she's in the doctor's office, and the doctor's telling her that she's got an STD, and she's going, but I can't have, I'm a Christian. She goes home, she tells her husband, and he slaps her around and calls her a slut. But of course, later on, we see him in a homosexual nightclub, don't we?
Oh, now who's the slut?
Yes, exactly. So, anyway, she heads off to this island too because she's going there with her campaign, and she's taking her son with her, and he would be, I don't know, about 9 or 10, and he's not allowed to play with girls' toys. And he also, when he drinks, if he holds out his pinky, she slaps it because she doesn't want him turning gay, you see.
So does she... Does she know that her husband was hanging out in the homosexual nightclub?
No, she hasn't found this out, you see. And he's blaming her, but she, I think, realises. Anyway, they meet on a boat, but they don't really realise. And we meet the third character, which is this gorgeous black guy called Romeo, and he's an artist. And he comes and sits down opposite Johnny, and this woman, her son, is sitting along the row a bit. And she talks to Romeo, who she knows. But Johnny's checking out Romeo, of course. And she tells him off about that. So off he goes. So that's the first encounter we have between the three main characters. But Romeo is engaged. And during the movie, we find out he's really torn between his family and being who he wants to be. Because him and Johnny get together, and of course Johnny falls for Romeo and then finds out Romeo's engaged, and it's all great drama. But it's quite an incredible movie because there's so much happening in it, almost too much at some stages. But one of the really poignant scenes is that this woman holds her meeting and she wants everyone to sign the petition against gay rights. Johnny goes to the meeting, as does Romeo and his fiancée, and Johnny actually stands up and asks questions about what the Bible says. And afterwards you see him going to the local minister who had left the meeting because he didn't agree with what was happening, and ends up sobbing in his arms, and this local minister just hold him saying, God loves you, you're okay, God loves you. So there's some amazing scenes in this movie. The ending is sad, and a lot of it is left up in the air. There's a lot of symbolism around the use of water, which is interesting because we use water in baptism. There's an amazing scene, and the song that we're going to play called Take It Easy is when Johnny and Romeo are in the ocean. And Romeo says, oh, you know, you're uptight, you have too many phobias. And he says, you need to learn to take it easy. And he said, you do that by learning to float. And Johnny says, but I've never floated. And then you have Romeo helping Johnny learn how to float. So there's no sex in it, I'm afraid.
Oh, really?
But there is amazing depth to it. There's amazing, like they're talking about, you know, being unfaithful. They're talking about bisexuality. They're talking about homosexuality. There's a whole range of issues in this movie. The ending sort of just left me.
Don't spoil it.
No, I'm not going to say, but it left me thinking,
So I'm interested to know, the woman character, whose name I can't remember.
Lena.
Does she change her opinion?
No,
film,
and I'm glad she doesn't, because I think that would be a bit corny.
Okay.
Because at one stage I thought that was going to happen. I thought, I hope that doesn't happen, because I think that would be just a little bit corny if that happened.
A bit predictable.
So, no, I'm sorry, but she doesn't. And she doesn't, as far as we know, leave the husband. We don't know if the child turns out to be gay.
Did they leave it open for a sequel?
Probably. So this track is one called by Tata from the movie, and it is from the scene where he's learning to float, and it's called Take It Easy.
Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne and on Star Observer Digital in Sydney, a digital radio pop-up station presented by 2SER Joy and Star Observer. Welcome everyone in Sydney. For more information, see the banner at joy.org.au for more details.
Now, you're on The Spirit Lounge with the priests, the Pom and the Poof. Tonight, we've been having a look at some spiritual movies, or maybe movies that we thought had some spiritual themes. The one that I actually got to watch was called Spirited Away. Spirited Away is an anime film. It's originally made in Japanese, but there's an English dubbed version, which I might have watched. The story follows the adventures of a young girl, Shihiro. Shihiro and her parents, they're moving into a small Japanese town in the countryside, and Shihiro's really missing her old house and her old community. Shihiro's father takes a bit of a detour on the way to the new house and drives through the forest and up to a dead end where there's a strange tunnel at the end of the road. Her parents decide to walk through, and she kind of gets dragged along. On the other side of the tunnel, they find a ghost town, which has a bathhouse for spirits, monsters, gods, and ghosts. But it's also home to an evil witch named Yubaba. Shihiro's parents are then promptly turned into pigs because of their gluttony, and Shihiro's forced to work at the bathhouse so that she too is not turned into a pig. The evil witch Yubaba holds Shihiro captive by taking her name, and this forms one of the major themes for the film, which is really about staying true to yourself and remembering who you are and not being drawn into the cultural norm that's around you. The film also voices the idea that kind of for every good in the world, there's also a little bit of evil. For example, the evil witch has a good witch twin who lives in another part of this fantasy world, and she kind of keeps much to herself throughout the film. For someone who doesn't watch a lot of anime films, Spirited Away was pretty intriguing for me. There were lots of adorable characters and beautiful artwork throughout the film. And some of the events and characters remain fairly unexplained throughout the film, which kind of draws you into the story. It reminded me a little bit of Alice being led into Wonderland in that Lewis Carroll story. My overall recommendation is that I think it's pretty entertaining and well worthwhile watching, even though perhaps wasn't as spiritually focused as I thought that it might be when I first set out to watch it. It did actually win an Oscar award as the best animated feature back in 2002. So very entertaining, lots of cute characters.
Now, because the Oscars are this weekend, we're talking about, we're reviewing some films which are faith or spiritual based. So if you have a favourite film with spirituality in it or it's faith-based, do let us know on air at joy.org.au, or you can SMS 0427JOY949.
And we've had a SMS from Jake who thinks that sounds like a good movie, so he's going to watch it.
Good evening, Jake.
Real people, real topics. Joy 94.9.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We're doing a few movie reviews tonight, looking at films that have a bit of a spiritual or faith-based theme.
And you're going to talk about semi-naked pharaohs now, aren't you?
Well, I watched a film. It's an extraordinary tale of two brothers. One is born of royal blood and one's an orphan.
Is one gay and one straight?
Not that I know of.
Oh, Cain and Abel.
They grew up best Egypt. Of friends and share a strong bond. But the truth will ultimately put them at odds with each other and tear their family apart as one becomes the ruler of the most powerful empire on earth at the time and the other chooses to be the leader of his people. And they finally have to confront each other and it will change the path of history forever.
It's just like Pharaoh and Moses.
Oh, you ruined my line. That sounds familiar. You would be right, Priesty.
Have you been peeking at his notes?
I've been reading my Bible again.
If only I was a little quicker on my buzzer, I'd have a little bing, ding, 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 ding.
I win a prize, a Logie.
So it is, the film's actually The Prince of Egypt, and it's the biblical story of Moses and his struggle to free the people from Egypt. There was actually a great effort to make sure that the film maintained its accuracy to the Bible story. The production team, they conferred with roughly about 600 religious experts during the making of the film.
That's not enough, clearly.
No, I don't think so.
That's
we didn't hear from them.
No, they should have done more research.
You're not. Are you an expert? Are you?
I want something, but I'm not sure what.
Despite being a cartoon that's adapted from an age-old story, the themes in The Prince of Egypt are still relevant in the 21st century. There's an affluent, dominant society which is kind of scared of change. There's political goals being leveraged and there's some collateral damage occurring at the same time. There's also fundamentalist religious movements being shown throughout the film and also families which are torn apart by political issues and by disagreements about things. But The Prince of Egypt is really a child-friendly film, which is kind of an you know, it's an animated musical. It's mostly about hope and emancipation of the people. There's great emphasis placed on the inner reluctance Moses feels when his love for his Egyptian royal brother comes into conflict with his brother's advocacy of the morally untenable slavery which is happening in Egypt. And the Prince of Egypt has lots and lots of good points, lots of things that I like about this film. There's a beautiful soundtrack, firstly, and secondly, the voices of the characters are also really, really well done. And some of the actors even perform the musical tracks during the film.
Oh, so this is an animation?
Yes, yeah, it's an animated film. So, and finally, it's really actually very visually impressive. They've got some really very impressive cartooning, and they've kind of combined it with some computer effects to provide an experience which is unparalleled.
Well, it sounds very busy in Egypt, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Okay, so is that for kids or is that for adults or what?
Mainly for kids.
So kind of educational slant to it?
A little bit. Okay. I think the story was really kind of emotionally driven, though, like not necessarily fact-based, but they did go to great efforts to make sure that the story would be cohesive with our understanding of the biblical story.
So is this track one of those nice pieces of music you were talking about?
This is, yeah. This is a track, one of my favourite tracks from the film, called Humanity.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof. And we're talking about films with a faith-based twist. I think, you know, some of them are quite twisted, Andrew.
Well, I just... Okay, so I chose that one after reading about it on the internet and it was on a list that I found. It was supposed to be very good.
I watched one that was on a list we found in Feddingham. I didn't even bother to review it.
How did you go with that?
Asleep. Anyway, I actually reviewed The Man Who Sued God, which is an Australian comedy that stars Billy Connolly.
I didn't know that was an Australian one.
It is an Australian film. And there is a lot of very good actors from Australia on it, like Judy Davis, John Howard, and a few others. Anyway, Billy Connolly is Irish.
Well, he's Scottish, actually.
No, but in the film he's not. He's okay. Irish.
Okay? It must
Will
be what threw me.
Please get this right. And he gives up being a solicitor and goes and becomes a fisherman. And he's not very good at anything, really. And he's divorced and he's got a child and nothing goes right. And he's building this house that, you know, he's going to build for 10 years and will never be finished. Anyway, lightning strikes his fishing boat and blows it up. And he's got comprehensive insurance and he goes to claim and they said, no, it's an act of God. So we don't pay out on acts of God.
Don't you love insurance companies?
Don't you? So he decides, well, he's not going to take this line down. No. So he decides to sue. And he sues all the religious leaders. Because he says, if you represent God, then you have to pay for my boat.
Yeah, you've blown up my boat. I'm going to sue you.
So it goes to court. And it is incredibly funny. Because the only way that they can win is by proving that God does not exist. And therefore they are not liable.
Oh, superb.
I know. And they try and settle, but he refuses.
And then they'd all have to resign from their jobs, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. And then a whole lot of other people who have been denied insurance because they've been told the same, you know, it's an act of God, decide to come on board. And I'm not going to give away too much of what happens, but it is very funny and it's very interesting the way the religious leaders actually almost come round to his way of thinking at some point.
Yeah, they secretly and know he's right.
They all, in the end, turn on the insurance companies.
Oh.
So it's like we all have to have someone to blame.
Yeah.
So everyone's going to sue the insurance companies in the end. But it's quite funny. And they and some weird things happen during the movie. But it is very funny. And Billy Connolly, of course, is always very funny.
He's a crackpot, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's good. You're on Spirit Lounge and we're talking about films which have a spiritual content or are faith-based. If you've got a favourite, let us know. On air at joy.org.au. You can SMS us on 0427 JOY 949. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Spirit Lounge on Joy 949 in Melbourne and Southern Star Observer Digital in Sydney, a digital radio pop-up station presented by 2SER, Joy and Star Observer. See the banner at joy.org.au for more details.
Now, Bertie, you also reviewed a comedy, didn't you?
I did. hands up, who hasn't seen Sister Act?
I've only seen part of it.
Mr. Pin,
hands up doesn't
been?
Work in the radio.
Yes, it does, because we can tell everyone that you put your hand up.
I haven't seen it.
Well, Sister Act originally came out with Whoopi Goldberg, and it's a hilarious movie. She goes from being a sort of Reno lounge singer to a convent nun in San Francisco all in one go. It's complete madness. And in fact, they made a sequel, and I love the title because it's called Back in the Habit. But the story, her name is wonderful. She is Dolores Van Cartier, which is just splendid. And she sings in a casino lounge bar in Reno in Nevada, and she's like a mole because her boyfriend is the gangster. He's the heavy man called Vince La Roca.
Great name.
All one word. But Dolores witnesses her boyfriend shooting a chauffeur. Mm. And because he knows she saw him, he sets his heavy men after her. So she runs to the police and she goes, my boyfriend's going to shoot me because I saw him shooting someone. So, totally loopy. This can only happen in the movies. So, of course, the policeman says, oh, well, I think you should go as disguise as a nun into a convent as a safe haven until we can catch him and you can testify in court.
As one does. That's what they mean by safe house.
She goes into witness protection in a convent. So off she goes, St. Catherine's Roman Catholic Church in a seedy rundown part of San Francisco. Of course, the Mother Superior, the Reverend Mother, is horrified that this woman's sort of coming in. So she begrudgingly becomes a nun, and she's given the name Sister Mary Clarence. But of course, the simple life of a nun bores her stupid. She keeps sneaking off to the pub around the corner, gets caught, and as punishment, she's then put in charge of the choir. Now, the choir can't sing a note, can't coordinate anything. And so Whoopi Goldberg then, you can imagine, suddenly gets the choir together and teaches them, retrains them, teaches them how to sing. But they don't just sing hymns. They sing gospel and they sing rock and roll adaptations. And so there's this wonderful scene in the film where this music is blasting out of the church like a disco, and you can imagine all the punks and dudes that live on the streets outside, suddenly going, hey man, that sounds pretty cool. And they all pour into the church to check it out. And so they succeed wonderfully because they take all the people off the street. They make the church the coolest place in town to hang out in because of this music. And then there's some stupid part where it says, we're now so famous the Pope's coming to listen to us, so there's a lookalike Pope John Paul II, so he's meant to come along in his Popemobile and listen to them as well. But I won't go into it, it's a long story, but there's a crooked policeman who then tells Vince where she is, and so they all land up chasing each other around casinos in Nevada, and it's all completely bonkers, but it's incredibly good fun. But the message through all the madness, the message that I got from this movie really was, wherever you're from, whatever you believe in, something like music brings people together. And if it's something that you love and enjoy, it breaks down those barriers and you suddenly have that commonality. And here you've got these elderly sort of white nuns in their 80s. You've got, a young gangster's mole, Whoopi Goldberg, who couldn't be more different. Nothing in common. But suddenly the nuns find this freedom of expression through singing. And it gives Whoopi Goldberg's sister, Mary Clarence, something to do. So it brings it all together. Great fun. And of course, they made the sequel. And a little bit of gossip. Actually, Bette Midler was offered the part originally. But she turned it down because she didn't think her fans would want to see her dressed as a nun.
I'm glad she turned it down.
Download Joy's free iPhone app, joy.org.au. Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom and the Puff. And in view of the Oscars coming up, we are reviewing movies which have spiritual content or they are faith-based. So if you have a favourite, do tell us. You can SMS on 0427 joy949 or shoot us an email on air at joy.org.au. So the last film we're going to look at, which I think all of us have seen, have we, is The Help.
Yes. No.
Well, I've seen it.
You must see it. This was this won lots of Oscars last year. Very hot. Now, The Help is a 2011 American drama film adaptation of the novel of the same name by Catherine Stockett. It's set in Jackson, Mississippi, and it's about a young white woman known as Skeeter, who nickname, and her relationship with two black maids, Abilene Clark and Minnie Jackson, during the civil rights era America, which was the early 60s. Skeeter's a journalist who decides to write a book from the point of view of the maids, referred to as The Help, hence the title, exposing the racism that they are faced with as they work for white families. It got about four Academy Award nominations, including a win for Best Supporting Actress for Octavia Spencer. Very cool story. Very worrying, actually, to realise that this was real life only 50 years ago. In the 60s. Frightening. Three central characters. There's Abilene, who is the middle-aged black maid who spent her whole life raising white children, and she's also recently just lost her only son. Minnie Jackson, another black maid and Abilene's best friend, who's so outspoken that she keeps getting fired from her job. And Eugenia Skeeter Felon, so known as Skeeter, who plays brilliantly by Emma Stone, young actress. So she's a young white woman who's recently moved back home to her parents' plantation after graduating from college as a journalist. Now, when she gets home, she's really upset because Constantine, her beloved childhood maid, has quit while she was away and has gone. No note, nothing, no explanation. And she's quite sceptical about, why would Constantine just suddenly leave without writing? So this is a question that hangs over the movie for the whole thing. So this is amidst the era of discrimination based on colour. Skeeter's one of the few who believes otherwise and is already uncomfortable with the way her white friends, family friends, are treating their maids because they are not treating them well. So she decides to write a book based on the lives of the black maids working for the white families. So, of course, she starts to approach the maids, asking them to contribute to the book. They're very reluctant because they fear they might be punished or fired. And so there's all sorts of hoo-ha going on between the white families and the black maids. But eventually, Abilene and Minnie and all the rest start to share their stories, their life stories, with Skeeter, who's scribbling away doing this book. She drafts the book. She sends it off to a publisher for a company in New York, which is played by Mary Steenburgen, who does very well, called Miss Stein. And Miss Stein thinks it could sell, but it needs lots more stories. So she goes and gets lots more stories. But also, this publisher believes there is a very small window of opportunity to publish this book because it should be published while the civil rights movement is happening. And she thinks it's just going to be a phase. So the message is, hey, you've got to get this book ready really, really quickly. Racial tensions running high, but more and more and more of the maids are coming forward with their stories. And they are quite upsetting stories. And she's recording them word for word. I'm not going to tell you anymore because it would spoil the rest of the movie because it's incredibly powerful. As I said, it's very hard to believe that this is only 50 years ago. It makes you realise just how attitudes have changed for the better. Many would argue perhaps not fast enough in some parts of the States. Especially somewhere like the Deep South, Mississippi.
When I watched it, I was actually really confronted by it because I was like, this seems so strange and alien to me. But it did actually happen not all that long ago. And I thought, I don't know how people could treat each other quite like that.
We see this is post-slavery, isn't it? So, I mean, you know, slavery was the beginning. And then this was really just, they thought they were being progressive by moving forward into this sort of era of giving these black women a home, a roof over their head, a job. But, you know, where were their husbands, boyfriends? Where were their kids? You know, no one was treated very well. It doesn't address where any of the husbands are, actually, which I thought was odd. I mean, there's one comment by the Association of Black Women Historians who finds it unacceptable for either this book or this film to strip black women's lives of historical accuracy for the sake of entertainment. For me, the performances by Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer were so powerful and emotionally moving. It's a movie that it educates by depicting a time in American history. It's not a documentary. They have used creative license. And I think they've done very well. It's a fabulous movie. If you haven't seen it, do go and see it.
Well, Nick from Hawthorne agrees with you. He actually studied this as part of a degree module called Film and Theology and thought it was an extraordinary movie. Stunning themes, both historical and a witness of hope for our times. He goes on to say that he loves our show and I'm sure he would give us an Oscar.
Thank you, darling. Thank you.
I added that bit, but I'm sure Nick would have put in the...
Right, Nick, yeah. We look forward to having our Oscar next week and we can show everyone on the radio.
Yes.
Become a Joy member so we can give you the best shows every day.
The world's most uplifting station.
Call 1-300-JOY-949.
Listen to Joy when you want, where you want, with the Joy app. Download it for free at joy.org.au.
And so that's been Spirit Lounge for another week. And goodbye to our friends in Sydney and in Melbourne from The Priest.
And The Pom.
And The Poof.
We'll see you next week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.